Good morning. You are listening to Raven Radio. Today is Thursday, August 22nd, 2013. I'm Holly Keene, and this is Raven News. Last week, Superior Court Judge David George ruled against two citizens hoping to give voters approval over major land sales and leases at Sawmill Cove Industrial Park. Jeff Farver and Mike Littman have been suing the city since 2008 after Sitka officials refused to allow their voter approval initiative to get on the ballot. The city's argument was that the power Farver and Littman wanted to give to the citizens is considered an appropriation, which only the assembly can make. The court agreed. But city code already gives citizens that power everywhere except the industrial park. So what happens to that law? Here's KCAW's Ed Ronco.
The short answer is nobody knows. Not yet, anyway. For the long answer, we have to look at city ordinances. They're online here. And go to Sitka General Code, section 18.12.010, paragraph B. It says, upon sale or disposal of real property, well, basically, it says that if the city wants to sell real property for more than $500,000 or lease its property for more than $750,000, it has to ask you first. Judge George's ruling says doing so, at least in the context of the industrial park, constitutes an impermissible appropriation, that it allows citizens to do something reserved for the assembly. Whether to change the existing law will be up to the 7-member assembly, which has tried to do it once before. In September 2012, Mike Reif and then Assemblymember Bill Payden introduced a measure that would let voters advise the assembly but not have complete power to approve or deny a sale or lease. The assembly voted to put that question off indefinitely, pending review by outside counsel. It was never taken up again. Reif said this week that he was still weighing his options and considering the matter in light of the recent court decision. In any event, the Farver-Littman case is far from settled. There's still the chance of an appeal on both sides. Farver and Littman could appeal the overall ruling, and the city could even file an appeal against some of the individual points it lost. Even though Judge George came down in favor of the city overall, he disagreed with two of their arguments. He said the initiative did not interfere with Sitka's police powers or with the comprehensive plan. Reporting in Sitka, I'm Ed Ronco.
A fire earlier this week at an asphalt plant in Sitka is not expected to delay a major repaving project near two area schools. On Monday morning, Sitka firefighters put out a major blaze at Aggregate Construction Incorporated. The company was heating asphalt containers on trailers when one of the heaters fell off its mount and ignited the trailer tires. The material was to be used on a stretch of Baranoff Street between Lincoln Street and Sawmill Creek Road. The street runs along Baranoff Elementary School and Pacific High School. Municipal engineer Stephen Weatherman says the project is still on schedule. Curbs have been installed and paving could begin as early as Friday. The goal, he says, is to have the project wrapped up before students in Sitka go back to school on the 28th. The situation aboard the celebrity cruise ship Millennium, disabled and tied up in Ketchikan, deteriorated Tuesday night. Ketchikan police responded to several emergency calls from passengers aboard the ship. Apparently, the callers thought there was going to be a riot. Here's Police Chief Alan Bengard.
We, the police department, received 3 911 calls from passengers on the MV Millennium, stating that people are getting unruly on the ship and they believe a riot was about to begin. Officers responded to the ship, met with ship security, and advised the 911 calls. Ship security and the officers contacted approximately 500 guests on the third floor of the vessel, and subsequently their peace was restored and officers left.
Bengard says those 500 people were upset about Celebrity Cruise's plans for where they would go when flown out of Ketchikan.
The officers that were responding to the ship were given information that some of the passengers were unhappy with the lack of communication or the miscommunication between them and the cruise line and ultimately where their final destination was going to be. Initially, evidently, they were told they were going to be flown to Anchorage. The plans had changed, and some were upset with that.
Bengard says he believes the passengers will instead be flown to Vancouver. Cynthia Martinez, Director of Corporate Communications for Celebrity, responded via email to a request for comment. She says she talked with ship security officers who claim that local police came to the pier about midnight Tuesday in response to 911 calls, but that police did not board the ship. Martinez says the ship security considers the mood on board as calm. She did not offer further comment. The 965-foot Millennium, with a passenger capacity of about 2,000, has been stuck in Ketchikan since Sunday evening when it was forced to return to port due to a faulty propeller. Passengers aboard the Millennium are leaving Ketchikan via chartered flights arranged by Celebrity. They also received full refunds and vouchers towards a future cruise. Glacier Bay Lodge will stay open at least for another 2 years. Several weeks of negotiations ended Tuesday. This resulted in a 2-year extension of the contract held by Aramark and Huna Totem Corporation.
That will keep the Glacier Bay Lodge open, keep the day tour boat running, as well as other services that they provide in the park, such as the restaurant and a gift shop.
John Quinley is spokesman for the National Park Service in Anchorage. He says the extension begins in January 2014. Before it runs out, NPS plans to put out a new prospectus. Glacier Bay National Park and Preserve received no bids on its previous proposal for a new 10-year concession contract in January. Based on conversations with Aramark and other companies about why they didn't bid, Quinley says reasons include cost of operation and maintenance.
We're going to be relooking at those numbers and seeing if there are maintenance tasks that perhaps were overstated, if there were things that would better belong on the Park Service's side of the ledger, ways to get that work done less expensively, perhaps. So we have a lot of work to do to try to rebuild a prospectus that will get some bidders.
Glacier Bay Lodge contains 56 rooms, which accounts for half of the lodging available in all of Gustavus, a town of 450 residents. Joanne Lesh is president of the Gustavus Visitors Association and owns Gustavus Inn with her husband, Dave. She and the association have been working on keeping the lodge open since the end of March.
Everyone said it couldn't be done. I'm very excited that we will get a chance to have 2 years of stability for our economy here in Gustavus.
Lesh says the association is holding a luncheon tomorrow at Glacier Bay Lodge to celebrate. State and federal officials, as well as a consultant, are looking at possible road, ferry, and electrical connections between Petersburg and the nearby community of Cake. Representatives of the U.S. Forest Service, the Alaska Department of Transportation, and a consultant for the Southeast Alaska Power Agency updated Petersburg officials on those projects this week. And as Joe Vicknicki reports, the assembly had some tough questions.
Two separate studies are underway, one looking at road and ferry improvements and another looking at possible power line options between Petersburg and Cake. Petersburg's assembly has asked to combine the two studies since new road construction would help construction of a power line. Forest Service District Ranger Jason Anderson told the assembly that the two projects needed to be looked at separately.
They have different underlying purpose and needs. One is to provide reduced cost power to the community of Cake. The other is to improve transportation opportunities between or to the community of Cake.
The two studies are also on different schedules. An environmental impact statement for the power line could be done a year or more before the same document is finished for road and ferry options. Mark Shinman with the consulting firm Commonwealth Associates is working on the power line EIS for the Southeast Alaska Power Agency. That organization owns the transmission lines that connect Petersburg, Wrangell, and Ketchikan and would build and own the connection to Cake. Shinman outlined four alternatives, including a no-action alternative identified for the transmission line connection. The consultant's proposed action is a route on the northern end of the island that could cost an estimated $66 million. Another route that runs through the center of Kuprinoff Island is expected to cost about $59 million. Assemblymember John Hogue questioned Shinman about the cost estimates for those alternatives.
The alternative for South Central route is cheaper, but you don't prefer that?
We don't. And maybe we're betting on the come. We're thinking that the road will come.
Ah.
But if, you know, but that's, if the road doesn't come along, we may end up going that route. And that's why it's still part of the EIS and still being considered.
Shinman also noted the cost estimates are still a moving target.
When we were in Cake last week, it dawned on me that the substation's 5 miles out of town, and nobody, it didn't seem like anybody planned a way to get the power from the substation into town. So we had a gap there. So I talked to IPEC, the local electric utility, and they said, They didn't have any money to do it, so we need to include that as a part of our project. So we're looking right now at moving the substation closer to town, so these numbers will go up. I did some back-of-the-envelope calculations, maybe $3 million.
Meanwhile, the state has appropriated $40 million for construction of the road and ferry connection. The DOT's Southeast Region Planning Chief, Andy Hughes, said the overall project would include a ferry and two ferry terminals if the northern route is selected. The CAKE Access Project, as it's called, does not yet have any cost estimates or alternatives drawn up. Assemblymember John Haverlick asked Hughes about the state's ability to fund construction and maintenance of the road, terminals, and ferry.
But you think you can get the money to do this?
At this point, yes, we do. Otherwise,
with
we would
the ferries?
Be, yes.
Okay.
Yes. And as far as I might address, as far as maintenance goes, we do not see, we wouldn't be going forward with any proposal if we didn't think we could maintain it year-round.
The year-round maintenance funding and operating dollars for a new ferry service has been a concern voiced by local elected officials about the road project. Assemblymember Cindy Logadakis pressed Hughes on that issue.
The state draft transportation plan actually paints quite a different picture about your deferred maintenance backlog and your ability to attract federal money. And I'm curious to know how you think this road would rank on a priority list for funding for state and federal money, given that you've already identified you have a shortfall. And it's right on the web.
No, that's true.
Hughes continued that he thought the road and ferry connection would be funded. The Federal Highway Administration is leading the study of possible road and ferry alternatives. A draft EIS for that project is not due out until the spring of 2015. In Petersburg, I'm Joe Vicnicki.
And that's all for Raven News. You're listening to KCAW in Sitka.